Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're bringing you the messages that you have sent us. So this episode is going to feature some responses to our episodes about the Shanghai Jing, the classics of the mountains and seas, the classic or the canon of the mountains and seas, our episode about the bonsai tree, our episode about stolen heads and stolen brains. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, let's kick right in to full gear on this listener mail episode. Here comes the robot. Here comes the listener mail.
Okay. Who wants should to read I do this one from? I can do this one from Alexandra if you want.
Go for it.
Okay. Alexandra writes in about the Shanghai Jing, says, "Hi guys, I was listening to the episode about the Shanghai Jing, and I wanted to say I really empathize with the childhood I believe dragons existed feeling you mentioned, and wanted to share why. I come from Krakow, Poland, which used to be Poland's capital for many centuries, and our local mythical / folklore symbol is a dragon. We have a beautiful castle, Wawel, located on Jurassic limestone on the bank of the Wisła, or the Vistula, river, and there is a legend saying a dragon used to live in a cave below the castle. The basic version of the legend I always heard goes like this. No knight could slay the beast when a local cobbler, Dratevka, showed up. He said he had a trick in mind. He got a sheep carcass and filled it with sulfur. The dragon, tricked by Dratevka's work, ate the sheep and suddenly felt very, very thirsty because of the sulfur. He started drinking from the Wisła River and drank and drank and drank until he finally burst. And thus, Dratevka became a hero. Ta-da."
I like it.
Yeah, good legend. I think it operates on the assumption that a dragon is much like a dog. Like, it does not stop to taste its food. It just wolfs it down. The goal is to get it down the gullet as fast as possible so it wouldn't be thrown off by the scent of sulfur. It's just going to swallow that sheep. Alexander goes on, "But it's just a legend. Why would I believe it? Well, there's an actual limestone cave under the castle, now a tourist attraction, and it's called Dragon's Den, which I believe in Polish is Smocha Yama. Alexandra says, "There's even a really cool metal dragon sculpture that breathes fire next to the entrance now." That sounds nice. Like some Burning Man stuff. There is also an ancient bone hanging on the cathedral located on the Vavil Hill, said to be the dragon's bone. So how could that be just false? All the proof is there. Why would somebody just lie about dragons? And then there is a little tongue sticking out emoticon. Thanks for reminding me of that feeling, and thanks for the amazing podcast. Love listening to you. Stay safe and healthy, Alexandra.
Well, I looked at the photograph of the bone hanging there, and yeah, it looks legit.
Yeah? Uh-huh. Well, yeah. What is that, actually? It looks like a large kind of tongue shape. Maybe it's a rib bone?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, its mind instantly goes to, like, whales, or something of that nature, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what that is.
All right, here's another one for us. This one comes to us from Erica. Erica writes, "Hi there. I was recently introduced to your podcast, and I'm loving it. Thank you for reminding me what interesting conversation like sounds like in the midst of a pandemic. I'm sure you get lots of mail, so forgive me while I nerd out a bit and share a few thoughts that were sparked by the few episodes I've listened to so far. I'll keep it as brief as possible. While I was listening to Monsters of the Shanghai Jing, you talked about how the Italian words for Dante's demons sound more interesting to English speakers than the translations. Like, you know, Malakota sounds better than Evil Tale. I think this is why many people find watching films in their original language with subtitles so much better than a dub, bad lip reading aside. By using subtitles, you're able to retain the original sounds of the dialogue while understanding the meaning in your native language. I was a latecomer to anime because growing up, I'd never seen it in the original Japanese, and I generally loathed the sound of the American voice actors chosen to dub those shows. Now, though, I really enjoy watching Japanese anime and listening to the cadence of the language, which for me is up there with Italian in terms of phonetic beauty. One thing that struck me when I started watching anime was that when characters performed magic, they would often use English or German for spellcasting. Mm. I'm really fascinated by this. What does magic sound like to people in different parts of the world? For English speakers, I think it's pretty fair to say that Latin is the official magic language. In addition to the hocus pocus that evolved from listening to religious services in Latin for many centuries, Latin is a language known only to the elite learned. It has the lyricism of Italian, and it's something from the distant past when wizards, dragons, etc., quote, used to exist, as you mentioned you believed as a kid in the Monsters episode. But what is it that makes mouth sounds sound magical to people from other parts of the world? Then I got to thinking about how Tolkien invented Elvish to sound beautiful and contrasting with that, and contrasting that with Klingon, which is meant to sound warlike. And I just had to email you to unload these thoughts on someone, and hope that you know about some kind of study that's been done on this. Unrelated to that, I'm listening to your podcast Brain and Head Theft Part 1 while I was between chapters on Worms by this W-Y-R-M-S by Orson Scott Card. There is so much in that book that links up with what you were talking about in that episode that it was actually a little creepy. You made it this far through the email. Thanks for reading. I'm excited that there are so many more of your podcasts I have yet to hear. Be well, Erica.
Oh, thanks, Erica. Well, yeah, a lot of interesting ideas here. I don't know if I'd ever put that together before about in the English-speaking world, Latin being a very common convention for the language of magic. And yeah, I think that would probably have a lot to do with Latin being the scholarly lingua franca of medieval Europe and Renaissance Europe. So at the time when alchemists would have been writing, you know, their occult tomes, I think probably a lot of these tomes would have been written in Latin because it was the language of elite learning and scholarship, even though nobody actually like spoke it.
Yeah. I mean, you see some other languages thrown in the mix, like especially post-Exorcist, you see Aramaic thrown around a lot. Anytime you have a demon, they're probably going to be, then they may be speaking in Aramaic if you can, you know, wing it. But you know, other ancient languages can work as well. But it does make me wonder, you know, we touched in recent Weird House Cinema on Chinese black magic films. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what languages like Chinese films turn to, or what languages Japanese films turn to, especially if they're historic in scope, you know. I'd be interested to find out. Of course, thinking back to our episode on the Oily Maniac, I guess in that movie, I don't recall exactly how the magic worked in that movie, but that was a movie about the magic of outsiders of other cultures. So It makes perfect sense that you would potentially use a language like a non-Chinese language in that scenario. So I wonder if there's a lot of that stuff going on. But on the subject of Klingon, we'll have to come back to that because I've long been interested in doing an invention style episode on invented languages.
Oh,
like
yeah,
just
yeah.
straight up created languages, the reasons for them, you know, entertainment or otherwise, and what some of the best examples are. So that's still on the list of possible episodes to do in the future.
It's interesting that I think one of the last episodes that we did of the dedicated invention podcast before we moved it into this feed is it was that we did invented words, but of course inventing a word is very different than trying to invent an entire language with its own rules and lexicon and grammar and everything. And I wonder if could it be possible that an invented language would ever really catch on, or is that pretty much just not ever going to happen?
Yeah.
All right, are you ready for this next message about stolen heads and stolen brains?
Let's have it.
This is from Sophie. Sophie says, "Dear Stuff to Blow Your Mind, obligatory but true sentence about being longtime listener, first-time caller. In your head-slash-brain two-parter this week, the name Jeremy Bentham rang recognition bells in my mind. Hey, isn't that... But I wasn't certain until you mentioned him still being at University College London today. Upon reflection, this would imply there being multiple men who decided they ought to have their bodies preserved to hang around in perpetuity, but honestly, humans do far stranger things all the time. My first encounter with Jeremy Bentham was as a complete surprise during our orientation tour several years back. I was doing a semester abroad at UCL's art school. Our first day was the whole group before we scattered to the many programs, so the tour guide made sure to lead the pile of unsuspecting American college students to the literal dead founder to tell us all about him and UCL. Our culture being one of shunning contact with death, meeting Mr. Bentham was somewhat arresting despite his genial demeanor in the pictures you see online. I can assure you he's rather more unsettling in person, especially when he's been sprung on you. The tour guide went on to explain that a requirement for accessing the endowment under his name is that he be in attendance at all requisite meetings. Thus, we got to contemplate the tableau of quiet, serious board meeting attendees patiently waiting as a very dead Jeremy Bentham in his glass case gets wheeled in, ideally with amusingly squeaky wheel sound effects or something. That at least amused me. I don't believe they explained that his head was elsewhere and why, and was unsure if you encountered this reason for his preservation or evidence for it in your research. They are not mutually exclusive pieces of lore necessarily, although I do remember being told about the wax face. I genuinely don't remember if they clarified that it was all wax, as what I gleaned was wax over his skull and an increasing urge to make for the exit, never to return. As an aside, I would presume I have a relatively strong reaction and that most visitors are far less unnerved. I imagine, as a regular student, I would either avoid his hallway whenever possible or become desensitized, as it sounds most are, given that they've taken to stealing bits of him. I know being there for only 6 months, I was somewhat inured, but barely. I have very strong hyper-empathy, a terrifically active imagination, and probably am a hyper-visualizer. I have autism contributing to my high empathy and my difficulty in turning it off, and my family slash friends and I suspect I also have mirror synesthesia added on. For obvious reasons, it's easy to generate strong visceral imagery and difficult to put it to one side. My brain is rather a live wire, and I can be tickled on the face from across the room. Much to my dismay, my plan to respectfully never go near dear Jeremy again was foiled by his placement at a critical intersection of hallways. The only way to the school's supply store was a set of lovely stairs directly by him. I cannot recall there being an alternate route while I was there and would always brace myself for the trip, desperately attempting not to make eye contact with his surreal, piercing gaze as I speed walked by him, with about the success we all have when trying not to think about the purple polar bear. I.e. none. I suppose I was lucky that their art supply selection was largely insufficient for my mediums of choice, and I was tragically forced to seek art stores off campus. Conveniently enough, they contain no dead people. According to a recent article by the school, he's been relocated to a student center since I attended, which hopefully is a nicer location for all involved. He's an important icon they no doubt wish to keep accessible to visitors in the UCL community, but also need to maintain proper collections protocols slash environment, and apparently significant security, so I imagine finding the ideal balance is difficult. Maybe the new site will prevent more head theft if the meat jerky head is kept with the body now. Or maybe his head will be like the gavel goat statue of UCL. Time will tell, no doubt. I'm not sure what the gavel goat is.
It sounds fun.
Thank you so much for your time and also your research. I appreciate a good citation so you can add me to the unofficial petition of your fans, hoping your new home will return to us a mothership website with that good robust tagging and source linking. Sincerely, Sophie. Well, Sophie, I really appreciate that final note. I don't know how much hope you should hold out for that.
I believe the gavel goat, by the way, is a traditional Christmas display erected in Gavel, Sweden. Some very swift online research seemed to provide that answer. But who knows? There could be multiple gavel goats out there.
Oh, that's a good-looking goat. It's got big old horns that make it look like a basket with a big handle.
Yeah. All right, here's another bit of listener mail. This one comes to us from Michelle.
Oh, and just to clarify something, this next message mentions in the subject line that it is about Haydn and the head theft of Franz Joseph Haydn that we talked about in part one of Brain and Head Theft.
Hi, Robert and Joe. I loved your episode on head and brain theft. It made me reminisce about my favorite teacher. I played violin in elementary school, but wasn't great at it and didn't love it. On my first day of middle school, the orchestra teacher asked for two people to switch to bass. So I jumped at the chance without telling my parents beforehand. Luckily, they felt bad bass playing was vastly better than bad violin playing and were okay with it. The teacher loved to tell us stories about the composers we were playing. He told us about the Surprise Symphony being written because his benefactor kept falling asleep during concerts, and about the Farewell Symphony, which involves musicians leaving the stage as the last movement progresses until it's only two violinists, because the orchestra had been stuck there longer than they expected, and Haydn wanted to give his benefactor the message that they wanted to go home. But now that I've learned about Haydn's head theft, I think my teacher left out the best story of all. I can't think of a better story to get middle schoolers into classical music than something as gory as decapitation and missing heads. I'm still playing the bass in local community orchestras, back when we could still have those, and I'll never look at a Haydn piece the same way again. He's always been one of my favorites, and I'll enjoy them all the more now once we are all allowed to play in groups again. Also, in response to Robert's comments about cats and food names, my cat growing up was called Pancake because my parents got her when she ran under our car and they almost smashed her flat as a pancake. Thanks again. You guys have been keeping me going through these weird times.
Thanks, Michelle. Rob, how does Pancake stack up in your cat food names?
I think Pancake ranking is a perfect name for a cat because, Smith, there was an Ig Nobel Prize winning paper, wasn't there, about how cats are neither solid nor liquid.
Mm-hmm.
They're you forget the details of that, but as their shape is in flux, sometimes they are flat like a pancake.
Yes, that Ig Nobel paper was about the rheology of cats. Rheology being the field of physics that studies how fluids and liquids flow. So cats, I mean, I think one would be hard pressed to argue that they do not flow.
Yeah.
Let the cats flow.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, this next message comes from Zolt. Zolt says, oh, and it's about our episodes on sinkholes. Zolt says, hi, Robert and Joe. I'm writing regarding your recent episodes on sinkholes. You mentioned that various sources of water, such as wells or rivers, often serve as sacred or spiritual sites for locals. I thought I'd mention an example. Sacred or holy wells are quite common in Hungary. One can often come across them while hiking in the countryside. These natural wells supposedly possess healing power, with stories of magical recoveries from various illnesses and disabilities, with the healing power often attributed to patron saints. The sacred nature of these wells is often discovered or confirmed by the appearance of a saint, or very often, the Virgin Mary. In the vicinity, there are more wild stories too, such as a healing well being created by a lightning strike. Interestingly, I noticed that these wells are often nearby other religious sites, such as small chapels or Calvary Hills. Maybe people attributed certain religious significance to areas, or it was just easier to make a pilgrimage to the same general place to fulfill all their religious needs instead of going all over the forest. It's one-stop shop. Calvary Hills, otherwise known as crosswalks, if you're not familiar, are also pretty interesting. They are usually a hill with at least 13 stations of crosses along a path that people hike up on around Easter time as a form of pilgrimage. Each cross along the path represents one stage that Christ goes through during his crucifixion, with three crosses on the top of the hill. Usually these hills are barely a few hundred meters above sea level, but they still tie back to the idea of sacred mountains as well. Anyway, thanks for all your good work, Zolt. P.S. I'm loving the Weird House Cinema episodes. I found a few movies that I enjoyed quite a lot that I didn't even know existed before.
Well, if you find a few movies that you enjoy quite a lot in that mix, you're doing pretty well. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't even think we love all of them.
No. Well, maybe the spirit of Weird House Cinema is that we're exploring movies that are always fun to talk about, whether or not they're fun to watch.
True. Yeah, and finding the things to love, even in films that are sometimes very uneven. I would say that's also core to the spirit of the thing. All right, this one comes to us from Toronto. Hi, Robert and Joe. I'm a big fan of the show and have been for ages. I have to say, I am enjoying the new format of the show with more content and variety. Okay, maybe except Weird Al Cinema. I think I'm not ready for that yet. I was listening to your episode on bonsais, and when you mentioned the story of the stolen bonsais and the plea for them to be returned, I thought that I had heard that before. Furthermore, I thought I remembered a happy ending to it. Sure enough, a quick search in my podcast library brought me to an episode from Stuff You Missed in History Class, 6-7-2020, by the way. Not sure if I found them through you or vice versa, but also a great podcast. I'll quote from there, and this is the 32-minute 55-second mark. The museum put out a call on social media for the returning, promising that they would not ask any questions. They were just afraid that these irreplaceable trees would die without proper care. 3 days after the theft, the trees reappeared in the museum's driveway. And then they also included a link to a SmithsonianMag.com article, Two Stolen Bonsai Trees Mysteriously Returned, Washington Museum. Anyway, they continue. Thought I would give you the good news. Best regards, Trano. P.S. The explanation of one of you regarding why cutting onions from pole to pole to cry less was pure stuff to blow your mind. Can't wait to test it.
Is it going to be your first time cutting an onion that way?
What, me or the listener?
No, to the listener, to Trano or okay. Trano. I apologize that I don't know how to pronounce your name. T-R-A-N-O. Well, that's funny. I hope you enjoy the pole-to-pole cutting. I mean, pole-to-pole cutting of onions is something I recommend in all kinds of scenarios. I mean, there are different reasons that you cut onions in different directions, but one of the main ones that I would say is that if you want the onions to kind of fall apart over cooking, cut them crosswise into the ring shapes, because then you're shearing more of the cells and they're just going to fall apart more, especially if you're like braising them or cooking them in liquid. If you want them to retain their shape more, cut them pole to pole, because then you're cutting along with the direction of the long cells. You're shearing less of them. There's just going to be less falling apart as the cooking goes on.
All right. Tips we can all use right there.
Sorry. This has been onion news you can use. But anyway, regarding the subject of your message, I really do appreciate hearing that the bonsai trees were returned. That's heartwarming.
All right, looks like we have some more bonsai listener mail.
Yeah, this one comes from Matt. I think Matt has written to the show several times before about agricultural scientific topics, and Matt's emails are always good. Matt says, "Good day, fellas. Love the episode on bonsai trees, particularly since you delved briefly into several biotechnology topics. I just wanted to add a couple of bits to the conversation. As you described, the green revolution and the dwarfization of major crops was indeed a tremendous agricultural leap. You were also right on the topic of lodging. Remember, this is the issue where lodging is where crops end up falling over, like the stalk bends near the ground, and this causes a lot of crop loss in farms around the world. And so one of the advantages of dwarf crops like wheat, for example, is that by not getting as tall, they're less likely to fall over and bend at the bottom of the stalk and waste or make harder to harvest the wheat at the top of the stalk. Anyway, going on, Matt says, lodging is still a major issue for farmers in many crops and can be caused by both extra weight on crop heads due to excess moisture, as well as blowdown from wind. It hurts yields, quality, and certainly makes for harvest trouble. If I could recommend a cool example to illustrate some height differences, you might want to check out some indigenous landrace maize varieties. Sierra Mixae comes to mind. We bred away from these varieties over the eons, but researchers are now actually looking to incorporate some of the genetics from these varieties back into modern high-production hybrids. In the case of Sierra Mixae, the traits allowing it to fix nitrogen from the air are of particular interest. Plus, Sierra Mixae can make for some pretty weird pictures. See attached. Rob, I did include the picture down here for us to look at. I guess that is supposed to be a maize plant, though it looks like it looks like oozing red goblin fingers with yellow nails.
Yeah, it's very alien looking.
Yeah. Matt goes on, you might have said this already, apologies if you did, but it's worth remembering dwarf varieties also produce more food per plant. Less energy spent growing up, more spent growing out. It's producing more with less, which continues to be a major factor in bettering food security. I know I've pestered you guys with agriculture-related subjects several times in the past, so thank you once again for begging my indulgence here. Keep getting that science out there. We all need it. Matt. Well, thank you, Matt. Yeah, this is interesting. I think we did talk about how the dwarf crops also do tend to have a higher yield or a higher percentage of, I can't remember exactly what the term is, it's something like the harvest index or something. It's like the percentage of the above ground weight of the plant that's the harvestable part of it.
All right, here we have one more listener mail. This one comes to us from Z. Z writes in and says, hey, Joe and Robert. I hope you're both well. I've been listening to your show for years and years, and suffice to say, I'm really glad the show is still going strong. It happened that I put the bonsai episode on as I was starting a walk through the Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve at the northern end of coastal San Diego. It's one of my favorite places in the world, and it's full of what I'd call natural bonsai, in form, if not always in size. The kinds of unique shapes you find in swamps, like the cypress you mentioned, or as crumholes formations near mountain Arctic tree lines, or in this case, on windswept coasts. It's really too dry in this area for trees to grow naturally, other than down by rivers and creeks. The one exception is the Torrey pine, which only grows wild on the headlands on either side of a particular estuary, where the valley topography channels the summer fog so that the trees get just enough moisture to survive the rainless summer and fall. Supposedly, these trees are a relic of a formerly more widespread pine forest throughout coastal southern California. Ice Age relics might be a cool topic on its own. In any case, I think these lovely contorted trees are a great example of the kinds of environmental constraints that led to bonsai-esque growth, growing as they do on the windy slopes of eroding sandstone cliffs without much in the way of soil or rain. The influence of the conditions you guys talked about is also underscored by the ornamental Torrey pines planted all throughout this area, which instead grow quickly into tall, rounded canopies when they're liberally watered. And the same effect is visible just on the two sides of the ridge here, with small bent-over bonsai on slopes facing the sea, taller open canopies in the canyon bottoms and on the ridge, and much fuller, rounder trees on the sheltered leeward slopes. The California coast actually has a bunch of endemic conifers, mostly pines and cypresses, that only grow in really restricted, often disjoint distributions near the ocean, and many of them grow in these strange bonsai shapes. I'm a big fan of the idea of bioregionalism, and I find these strange, rare trees to be a really lovely symbol of the particularity of this stretch of coast, which helps me feel like I'm more connected with the placiness of the land, especially in Southern California, where there are hundreds of kinds of ornamental plants from all around the world just in one suburb. In any case, I'm looking forward to what you do next, and am wholly in support of more plant tree-themed episodes. Sincerely, Z.
Rob, I've attached some of the photographs that Z sent us to look at. These are mostly what they were referring to as like bonsai trees, but growing wild, not necessarily in size, but in shape. And these are a lot of really beautiful trees. I like them.
Yeah, trees finding their way in a in a unique landscape, sometimes, you know, with some definite restraints in place.
I think in the bonsai episode, we did make the comparison to poetry, right? The idea that in some cases, poets often feel that creativity is driven by the constraints imposed by a certain rhyme or meter scheme, because you can't just say anything. It leads you to say things that you wouldn't have said otherwise, you know, because you've got to fit it into the meter or something. And I think that looks true of many trees, even if they're not having constraints imposed by humans, but maybe having constraints imposed by the harshness or weird conditions of the natural environment where they're growing. They kind of form a poem because of how hard their life is.
All right. Well, that is it for this particular listener mail mailbag. But there's stuff we didn't get to this week. There's stuff that will come in between now and next week, and we will read even more listener mail. So feel free to chime in. You have responses to old episodes, new episodes, ideas about what future episodes could consist of. Everything's on the table. You got corrections? Let us know. You got responses to other people's listener mail? Let us have it. Do you want to correct other listener mails? Do so. You want to correct corrections? Yeah, well, whatever you like. This is kind of your show at this point. So, let us know. In the meantime, if you want to check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind or the Friday episodes of Weird House Cinema, you know where to find it. Go to the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.